We just started Sabbath school classes again for the new school year last week. I appreciate all the work that Maria has done in that, and appreciate all the work as parents we do to make sure our children are there and take those lessons home and hopefully continue to incorporate those in your lives. It's a critical component to our Sabbath school education. But you may have heard about the Sabbath school lesson that went something about like this. They were talking about the Ten Commandments, how that inevitably we all as human beings break them, and then the concept of repentance and forgiveness. So at the end of class, the teacher asked, said, okay, what must we first do to be forgiven for the breaking of a commandment? One young boy raised his hand and said, I know. I said, well, what's that? Said, to be forgiven for breaking a commandment, you must first break one. The teacher is probably looking for repentance, but technically speaking, he's true. He's right. Or maybe you're like the old married couple that were having a disagreement. Husband said something rather insensitive to his wife. He realized he was wrong. He later apologized. She forgave him, and they made up. But every now and again, she was in the habit of bringing it back up, and he asked, he said, don't we just forgive and forget? And she said, oh, absolutely. I just want you to remember that I forgave you. Sometimes we do that. Forgiveness is like that. I'd like to give this week's message as a bit of a follow-up to last week's message. Of course, there we talked a little bit about judgment, discernment, condemnation, how those things are related. And we talked about, we certainly have the need to judge, but we need it to be wise judgment. We need it to be discerning and not condemning of others. We can't judge people's hearts. When we do, we cross the line into condemnation. And before we even begin to make a judgment, we need to make a discernment ourselves. Do I need to make this judgment? Is it appropriate for me to do so? If we do, how do I go to my brother in a gentle, loving approach, helping to restore him, as Paul said there in Galatians 6:1, and not in a way that's corrective or self-righteous with our attitude? We talked about what we do even when somebody wrongly condemns us. Maybe they're right in what they're saying, but they do it with that negative sort of an attitude, maybe come off self-righteous. We talked about the need to consider what's actually being said, as David did with Shimei. So what I'd like to talk about today, this week then, is this. What if we are wrongly accused? What if we consider what the other person has said, we repent and we change? That's good. That's what we should do, absolutely. But what about that self-righteous person that condemned us? What do we do about that? Maybe they were right in what they said. Maybe we made the changes that we needed to make. But how do we feel now about the person that pointed them out to us? That's what I'd like to talk about today. How we can grant forgiveness. How we can grant forgiveness. I'd like to start with just a simple definition of forgiveness. This is just from Merriam-Webster, www.merriam-webster.com. Definition 1A, to give up resentment, to pardon, to forgive an insult. I think we all probably agree with that textbook definition of what forgiveness is. When we talked about judgment last week, we specifically talked about condemnation, and we mentioned Luke 6, verse 37. Let's go there, start there again today, kind of picking up where we left off, seeing what else is said. When Christ was talking about condemnation and making wise judgment, what else did he have to say? Luke 6, verse 37. He says, judge not, and you shall not be judged. Condemn not, and you shall not be condemned. What's the next thing he says? forgive, and you will be forgiven. He talks about not condemning people, how we're not supposed to practice self-righteous judgment. Oftentimes, when we are judged wrongly, we are condemned. Our reaction might be to turn around and condemn someone right back, mightn't it? It's human nature. We've all probably done that. But Christ follows up this statement. He's saying, don't follow condemnation up with more condemnation. He's saying, forgive, and you shall be forgiven. I don't think this is a coincidence. I don't think these are random little sayings that Christ was just dropping on the crowd, so to speak, for their edification. Certainly it was for their edification, but I don't believe it was random. I think it was a reminder that no matter how rude, no matter how insensitive, how self-righteous somebody else's condemnation of us might be, there is a need to grant forgiveness. We mentioned this parable briefly last time. We didn't turn there, but let's go ahead and turn to Matthew 18. Matthew 18, and talk about the unforgiving servant. Matthew chapter 18, and we'll start in verse 21. Matthew 18 and verse 21. Jesus said to him, I do not say to you, well, let me back up. Excuse me, that's verse 22. Verse 21. Peter came to him and said, Lord, how often shall my brother sin against me and I forgive him? Up to seven times? Jesus said to him, I do not say to you up to seven times, but up to 70 times seven. 490 times, okay? Now, was this a literal statement that Christ meant? No, it wasn't. Won't go into all the details of the Hebrew idioms, but it wasn't. Seven times was the customary time that the Jews would forgive one another before they said, okay, this person isn't changing, you know, let him be as an outcast and, a foreigner to you. But Christ said, no, it's not just a number we throw on it. And he throws out this big number, 70 times seven, to say, you know, by comparison, relatively speaking, we don't put a number on how often we forgive. He says, so 70 times 7. Verse 23, he says, therefore the kingdom of heaven is like a certain king who wanted to settle accounts with his servants. And when he had begun to settle accounts, one was brought to him who owed him 10,000 talents. Heard various estimations over what this might be. And if memory serves, in modern day vernacular, this is probably somewhere in the millions of dollars, okay? Owed him millions of dollars, and he was not able to pay. So his master commanded that he be sold with his wife and his children and all that he had, and payment be made. Servant therefore fell down before him, saying, Master, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. Then the master of that servant was moved with compassion, and that's a word I want us to focus on and think about today as we think about forgiveness. Compassion. He released him and forgave him the debt. He didn't just say, okay, well, pay me back later when you can. He actually forgave the debt. He forgave millions of dollars worth of debt. Because he was moved with compassion. Verse 28. He says, but that servant went out and found one of his fellow servants who owed him 100 denarii. This was a few bucks, maybe, you know, $20, $30. Chump change comparatively to the millions of dollars that this servant, the first servant, had owed. He laid hands on him and had compassion on, no, he didn't have compassion on him. He grabbed him by the throat, said, pay me what you owe. He grabbed him by the throat. You know, I think about that. I grew up, I had a brother and a sister, and we would wrestle, we would fight, you know. I've got kids, and I don't think it's any secret. Sometimes boys wrestle. But we had a rule when I was a kid, and I had the same rule for my kids. You can wrestle, you can have fun. Stay away from each other's throat. Because that's when things get dangerous. That's when you can start cutting off somebody's air supply. That's when things can get out of hand very, very quickly. All right? This fellow directly went for the throat. He said, pay me what you owe. So the fellow servant fell down at his feet and begged him, saying, have patience with me, and I will pay you all. And he would not, but he went and threw him into the prison till he should pay all the debt. You know the story. Other servants report this situation back to the first master. Picking it up in verse 33, he says, should you not have had compassion on your fellow servant, just as I had pity on you? And his master was angry and delivered him to the torturers until he should pay all that was due to him. The question that the master posed to this first servant who was not being very forgiven, the question wasn't, does this guy owe you money? The question was, shouldn't you have compassion? Shouldn't you be forgiving? Principle's the same. The story that Christ gave here was illustrating. God forgives us our trespasses. There's not a question whether we trespass against God. We can all think of this, as I'm sure we do every Passover. We're reminded, we talked about in the fundamental belief Bible study a couple weeks ago. Each one of us, by our sins, caused the death of Jesus Christ on our own. It wasn't something my neighbor did, something I did. There's not a question about that. Do we owe the debt? We do. The question becomes, should we forgive it? Christ uses this story to illustrate this principle. Yes. Yes, we should forgive. Sometimes we can let small things become big in our mind. It could be a relatively minor trespass. I remember when I worked as an engineer, this is going back around, I'll tell you exactly when it was in a minute. It's going around 17, 18 years ago. I was working as part of a design team, and part of my responsibilities was to design a nozzle, a gas nozzle for a car, that after you shut off and you pulled it out of the tank, you didn't get that like dribbling action where you get gas on your shoes or on the ground or things like that. Part of this was because, it's kind of funny, part of this was because of an EPA regulation. Part of it was because the fellow who was our district sales manager down in Texas had recently become vice president of our division. And right before doing that, he had to buy a brand new 1,500 pair of cowboy boots for somebody who pulled the gas nozzle out of his car and went to turn around and it dribbled gas all over his expensive cowboy boots and ruined them. And the guy made such a big stink with the gas station owner that our company got involved, and to make that life easy, he just bought this guy a new set of boots. So at any rate, make a short story long, I was involved in this project where we were working on making gas nozzles that don't drip. And so I had a design, another fellow had a design, and we both kind of had, we were trying to, you know, do a group thing where we come to the best design possible, but you had a little bit of a competing design. You know, I thought my way was better, and he thought his way was better, and we both worked for a boss who basically had to make the decision and that. So, you know, it got a little bit edgy. I mean, not confrontational or anything like that, but, you know, whose design was going to win, and we both thought ours was better. I was sitting at my desk one morning, and a fellow comes in, and he said, I don't know what happened, but a plane or something just crashed in downtown New York City. I thought, what's going on? And we had a very strict internet usage policy at the time. You know, we weren't allowed to do anything that wasn't strictly work-related or unless it was some sort of major news event. And I thought to myself, well, this qualifies as a major news event. So I went ahead and went to on the website and looked it up and soon saw the events of September 11th unfolding before me. The rest of that day was pretty much shot in terms of productivity. We gathered around in the lunchroom, we watched TV, and suddenly, whose design we used on that gas nozzle didn't really matter too much to anybody anymore. Small things have a way of creeping up and becoming big things. But we need to remember, they aren't big things. Sometimes a small offense can do that. Maybe the way someone says something or doesn't say something can hurt our feelings. And we should seek reconciliation, of course. But we need to forgive. We need to forgive and forget, truly. Verse 35 of Matthew 18, Christ says this. He says, "So my heavenly Father will also do to you if each of you from his heart does not forgive his brother his trespasses." In the modern day vernacular, Christ is saying, seriously? Really, you're going to let this come between you and salvation? It's a reminder. We've been forgiven a great debt. The question isn't, have we been wronged in any way? Has anyone done anything to offend us? The question is, should we forgive? The answer is clearly yes. And to receive forgiveness, ultimately, from God, we need to give it. I don't think there's any big debate there. This parable is very clear. So the hard part, how do we do it? How do we do it? How do we go about giving forgiveness? It's one of those things that's simple, just hard to do. Simple but hard. Maybe you've heard some of these simple but hard questions asked before. A man is dressed in all black. He's walking down a lonely country lane. Suddenly, a large black car comes speeding around the corner without his lights on, comes screeching to a halt just in time to keep from hitting this man. How could this be? Answer, it's daytime. It's daytime. Never said it was dark. It's simple, it's just hard. How many times can you subtract 10 from 100? 10, right? No. Once. Because after you take the first 10 away, you're taking 10 away from 90. And then from 80. See? Simple but hard. Some months have 31 days, some have 30. How many have 28? All of them, that's right. All of them have 28. Last one. A little girl kicks a soccer ball. It goes about 10 feet and comes straight back to her without anyone else touching it. It's not on a tether. It's not on a string. How can this be? She kicked it straight up. Gravity. Simple but hard. How do we forgive others? It's simple, just hard to do. There's an interesting story in King David's life. And it's not one of the big stories. David and Goliath. Cutting off Saul's robe. David's sin with Bathsheba. If there was a movie about David's life, this would be part of a subplot. Might not even make the final cut. But it's a story, I think, that helps illustrate this. And one I'd like for us to cover today. You can begin turning to 2 Samuel chapter 13. That's where I'm going to bring out my other Bible. Last week we talked a little bit about how David was on the run from his son Absalom, who tried to take the kingdom from him. But before that happened, there had been another rift between David and Absalom. David had multiple wives. He had Absalom with one of his wives, and through that wife, he had a daughter named Tamar. Through another wife, he had a son named Amnon. Amnon fell in love with Tamar's half-sister. He forced himself upon her sexually. Absalom then goes and takes revenge and kills Amnon. Absalom goes into hiding, fearing for his life from the king. 2 Samuel 13, I want to pick it up in verse 37. I will be reading from the New Century Version. It's just a little bit easier reading for this particular story, not necessarily the translation I would go to for doctrinal reproof, but for this story it reads a little easier. 2 Samuel 37, and said, David cried for his son every day, talking about the loss of his son Amnon. It said, but Absalom ran away to Tamai, son of Amihud, the king of Geshur. After Absalom ran away to Geshur, he stayed there for 3 years. So we see some time goes on. When King David got over Amnon's death, he missed Absalom greatly. David was very upset about this whole event, as you might naturally expect. He was saddened by the loss of his son Amnon. But as time went on and wounds began to heal, he now became saddened by the separation between himself and his son Absalom, the one that was still alive, the one who would later then try to take the kingdom from him. But at this point in time, David's feeling very hurt by this separation from his son. One of David's close advisors, Joab, understands this and he sees this. And Joab was a pretty smart guy. So he comes up with a plan on how to help out the reconciliation between the two. Joab sends a woman to David to kind of give him this story, to kind of give him a scenario, say, well, it's kind of like this, and not necessarily address the issue directly, kind of the same way that Nathan did about the man who owned the sheep and the greedy neighbor who took it when Nathan had to address the situation with David's sin with Bathsheba. Seems that David was a guy that needed to be led to an answer. Telling him directly didn't work out so well. We're told on various occasions David was a bloody man. Seems that maybe he had a bit of a temper. But note how God allows this to work. He wants things to work out for David. So he works through Nathan. He works through Joab here to start this path to forgiveness. And he does it with compassion even towards David. Just the way that he sets this scenario up. See, I think that's critical when we think about forgiveness. Forgiveness and compassion have to go hand in hand. You can almost say they were synonyms. Let's go ahead and pick up the story then in 2 Samuel 14. Starting in verse 4. It says, so the woman from Tekoa spoke to the king. She bowed face down on the ground to show respect and said, my king, help me. King David asked her, what is the matter? The woman said, I am a widow. My husband is dead. I had 2 sons. They were out in the field fighting and no one was there to stop them. So one son killed the other son. Now all the family group is against me. They said to me, bring the son who killed this brother so we may kill him for killing his brother. That way we will also get rid of the one who would receive what belonged to his father. My son is like the last spark of a fire. He is all I have left. If they kill him, my husband's name and property will be gone from the earth. Then the king said to the woman, go home, I will take care of this for you. The woman Tekoa said to him, let the blame be on me and my father's family, my master and king, let you and your throne be innocent. King David said, bring me anyone who says anything bad to you, and he won't bother you again. David kind of offers to fix their wagon should anybody try to interfere with his plans to work things out for this woman. Picking up in verse 12, the woman said, let me say something to you, my master and king. I used to like to watch the old Columbo series. It kind of reminds me, you know, he always said, just one more question. Ladies got just one more thing, real quick. By the way, king says, speak. Then the woman said, why have you decided this way against the people of God? When you judge this way, you show that you are guilty for not bringing back your son who is forced to leave home. We will all die someday. We're like water spilled on the ground. No one can gather it back. But God doesn't take away life. Instead, he plans ways that those who have been sent away will not have to stay away from him. Ever pour a glass of water out on a dirty ground and then try to get that water back? It don't work, does it? Paul referred to his life being poured out like a drink offering near the end of his life in 2 Timothy. We understand, I think we even talked about this a little bit when we covered the fundamental belief of Passover. Christ was that drink offering that was poured out because in the Levitical priesthood, when they would do offerings, some of the burnt offerings in that they could eat of. They could take, they could use that for feeding the priest. They would even feed the congregation at times with it. But a drink offering, it wasn't that way. When that wine was poured out on the ground, it was gone. You weren't getting it back. A woman reminds him, says, our life is like that. We live it. We breathe daily. We interact with people. We get offended. What happens is going to happen. No matter what we do about it, our life's going to end after a certain number of days. Verse 14, in the middle of this, where she really drops the bomb on him, she said, God doesn't take away life. Instead, he plans ways that those who have been sent away will not have to stay away from him. She kind of drops the mic and walks away at this point. She says to him, why can't you do this for your own son? God is a giver of life. That's what his purpose is. We won't turn there, but John 10:10 tells us Christ came that we might live life and live it more abundantly. He's not a thief. Well, actually, let's do go ahead and turn to John 10:10. Just a moment. That's not far away in my other Bible. John 10, verse 10 says, a thief does not come except to steal and to kill and to destroy. I have come that they may have life and that they may have it more abundantly. See, Christ came as a giver, not as a taker. God is a giver. Ever notice that the word forgiveness has the word give right in it? It's not about taking. It's about giving. When we forgive people, we are giving to them. Have you ever been in a situation where maybe you've wronged somebody? Maybe you've done something wrong. Maybe it was as a little kid. I remember getting in trouble at school once upon a time, and I had to take a note home and get it signed by my parents. I had to wait for my dad to get home from work, and I had to explain to him what I had done and why. We sat and we talked, and the school knew that basically any punishment I was going to get at home was going to be worse than anything that they would do to me. And I was expecting that. But at the end of the day, my dad and I just talked. I didn't get a SWAT. I deserved one. I'd certainly gotten many before, but I was getting to the point in time and age where, you know, the corporal punishment wasn't effective as a verbal discussion. So Dad and I talked. At the end of that conversation, I still remember the relief I had. I felt like I had been given my life back. I remember saying something to that effect to my dad. And he said, I know. He said, I had the same conversation with my dad. He said, it kind of feels like you've been let out of jail. He said, of course, my dad knew exactly what that meant. That was Grandpa. He had been there a few times, but regardless, I felt like I had been given life back. I could breathe. Those hours waiting for Dad to get home, some of the heaviest hours of my life. I still remember them 30-some years later. But he gave me life back. Dad forgave me. When we forgive people, we are moving with compassion to do so. We give them their life back. We go back to the story here in 2 Samuel 14. You see, some additional time goes by and a few other events happen between the beginning of the story and the end of chapter 14. We won't go into all those in detail. But let's notice in verse 33, let's picking up the story. So Joab gets message back to the king and told him Absalom's words. Absalom had said, "I want to get back and reconcile with my father." So the king called for Absalom. Absalom came and bowed face down on the ground before the king, and the king kissed him. The king forgave him. The king had compassion on him. They reconciled. Absalom couldn't have gone on living life in David's kingdom unless David forgave him. He forgave him. He gave him his life back. Now again, later on, we see Absalom starts the coup and ultimately winds up dying. But at this moment in time, they were able to reconcile. So it's obvious that we must forgive. And for the most part, I think we are willing and able to forgive people when they ask for it. Absalom came to David and he asked for it. It gets infinitely harder to forgive someone who doesn't ask for forgiveness, doesn't it? So I want to go to definition 1B from www.merriam-webster.com. 1B is this: forgiveness, to grant relief from payment of. To grant relief from payment of. They don't have to pay it off. Once had a loan on a car, and this was back in the day before you had online payments, or at least I wasn't doing them, so we had actual coupon books. We sent in the last one, we thought we were paid off, and as it turns out, there was a small difference. So I got a note from the bank that said, you still have an outstanding balance on this car that you purchased. That outstanding balance was 27 cents. I said, okay, I'm 27 cents away from owning this car. It's going to cost me more than a stamp. I think stamps at that time were maybe 42 cents. So it tells you how long ago this was. So I called them up and I said, hey, okay, I got your note. I'm willing to pay this off. I said, but I don't have any more coupon books. You know, I don't have any more payment coupons. I don't have any more payment coupons to send in to you. What should I do? And the lady said, well, let me check your account. And she looked at it and she said, did the letter we sent you say that you owe 27 cents? I said, yes, it did. She said, hold on just a minute. And it took surprisingly long for her to come back with this answer, maybe 10, 15 minutes. I don't know what she was making, but I'm sure they paid her more than 27 cents in the time it took her to find this question. And so this question, she came back to me and she said, yeah, I talked to my manager and we're just going to forgive that debt and we'll send you the title to the car. And I said, well, thank you very much. I appreciate that. And I wasn't, I guess I was maybe a little mildly aggravated thinking, come on, 27 cents, you're killing me here. But I was willing to pay it because I knew by rights I had to, but they forgave it. They forgave that debt. What about payment in an emotional sense? If somebody says they're sorry, they're paying us back. But if they don't say they're sorry, they're not really paying their debt. See, this other definition of forgiveness, I think, brings that to light. The person's not even willing to pay that debt. We still have to forgive it. We still have to forgive it. We read in Luke 6 verse 37 a little bit earlier, but let's go back to Luke 6. I'm going back to the New King James here. Luke 6. And we're going to start in verse 27. Luke 6:37 told us, forgive and you shall be forgiven. But let's notice the backstory in verse 27 of Luke 6. It says, but I say to you who hear, love your enemies, do good to those who hate you, Bless those who curse you, and I pray and pray for those who spitefully use you. To him who strikes you on one cheek, offer the other cheek also. And from him who takes away your cloak, do not withhold your tunic either. Give to everyone who asks of you, and from him who takes away from your goods, do not ask them back. This is where it gets hard. This is where the rubber meets the road, as they say. You mean even if my boss, in the heat of battle, yells at me about a problem that happened that wasn't my fault, and I fix it, and he doesn't say later on, hey, I'm sorry, I lost my cool. You mean I still got to forgive him? Absolutely. Verse 31, and just as you want men to do to you, you also do to them likewise. This is what many commonly refer to as the golden rule. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Verse 32 says, but if you love those who love you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners love those who love them. What? You mean I can't just ignore somebody who did me wrong? I mean, I'll forgive them. I just don't ever want to see their stupid face again. Christ says, nope, not good enough. Verse 33, he says, and if you do good to those who do good to you, what credit is that to you? For even sinners do the same. Everybody does that, right? It's a relatively simple matter to be nice to somebody who's nice to you. A lot of times this works out, you know, kind of naturally speaking, in ways we don't think about it. When we go to the store, when we're checking out, we get a cashier who's polite, smiling, happy. It's easy for us to be polite, smiling, and happy too. But if that person just got chewed out by the floor shift supervisor because they didn't handle the previous transaction wrong, and they're ringing you up, and they're like, hi, welcome to, you know, wherever. How was your day? How do we respond? Yeah, I'm fine. I'll just get my stuff and leave. Or do we have an opportunity where we can show them what forgiveness looks like? Do we have an opportunity to offer them encouragement? Offer them a little bit of smile? A little bit of a compassionate friendship? Even if it's just for a moment, who knows, might help them be reminded of what forgiveness looks like. Verse 35 said, but love your enemies, do good, and lend, hoping for nothing in return, and your reward will be great, and you will be sons of the Most High, for He is kind to the unthankful and evil. We don't forgive people just hoping that they'll say sorry later. That's not our purpose. We're not trying to goad some sort of reaction out of them. We're told God God is kind to the unthankful and evil. It's a little bit of a kick in the pants to you and I, isn't it? We do it because God does it for others. He does it for us. We want others to treat each other. We want others to treat us as we treat them. We want to be treated nicely. Everyone does. It's the right thing to do. It's a reflection of the character of God. The character that we need to be building to be a part of His kingdom. It's that character that we must want to have. Forgiveness is something that we need to grow in. Something that each of us can grow in. 2 Peter 3:18 tells us to grow in grace and knowledge. Certainly an act of grace to be able to humbly forgive someone. And not as that couple we talked about at the beginning that likes to remind each other, why forgave you, remember? We need to grow. Grow in forgiveness. Verse 36. Therefore, because of all this, Therefore, be merciful, just as your Father also is merciful. Christ in saying, therefore, is kind of putting it this way. He said, if all of this is in your character, if you treat those kindly who don't treat you kindly, if you're compassionate and forgive those who don't ask for it, then this is what you will be. You will be merciful. You will be compassionate. You will be forgiving. Back to where we started. God is merciful to us. We're to be merciful to others. Now understand, that doesn't mean we need to let others go on hurting us. I worked with a couple of guys when I was in college. I lived off campus. They lived on campus. And it was a kind of a rough area town, and inevitably their cars would get broken into. Windows would get smashed, radios would get stolen, change would be taken out of it. One fellow owned a Jeep, and he had those plastic windows that they roll down. And they got tired of people cutting through the windows, because they would just take a pocket knife, they'd cut through the vinyl, they'd reach in, and they'd take, you know, $1.50 worth of change he had there. So rather than keep having to replace his $300 windows every couple of few months, he just left it unlocked. He couldn't park anywhere else. He just left it unlocked. People wanted to take a few bucks. He took a few bucks. He let himself be wronged in that way, but it wasn't costing him $300 every couple of months. If you're in a relationship where someone is hurting you, someone is abusing you, it doesn't mean you have to go on taking that abuse. You certainly have the ability to preserve yourself as needed. But we still have to forgive. That's a reminder. We can be wise, we must be forgiving, but it doesn't mean we have to endure abuse. Those are two different things. I've talked to people who've been through all sorts of horrible relationships. Things that were physically hurtful. Things that were emotionally devastating. And the people that hurt them died before they ever had a chance to say they're sorry. Or maybe that person never even wanted to say they were sorry. It's devastating to people. It causes all sorts of emotional, spiritual harm. People get locked into a mentality of they're not good enough. Maybe they turn to addictions, or they wind up becoming addicted to things that they use to cope. Maybe they live their life in a state of anger, where everything that goes wrong is somebody's fault. Somebody needs to be blamed. They're deeply hurt, and they're trying to resolve these feelings of forgiveness that they want to grant, they want to give, but they just can't because the other person isn't there. The other guy is gone, and there's nothing they can do about it. But see, that's the catch. There is something you can do about it. There is something we can do to forgive those who never ask for forgiveness. Even if the other guy never says they're sorry, we can still forgive. I've talked to people in that situation, and the people who cope the best are the ones who truly do forgive and forget. There's a mantra in some of these groups. It says something like this. It says, when you forgive, you heal. But when you let go, you grow. Forgiveness isn't just accepting an apology. If that's what it was, then it would be impossible for those who were hurt by people who never asked forgiveness to forgive. But that's not true. Forgiveness is more than that. It's about letting go. It's about having compassion on those that have hurt us. Forgiveness is hard. Mahatma Gandhi put it this way. He said, the weak can never forgive. Forgiveness is an attribute of the strong. Forgiveness is more than just a good idea. It's more than just a catchy phrase from some Eastern religious figure. It's a necessary part of every Christian's life. Christ made it clear that if we do not forgive, we will not be forgiven. We each want forgiveness. We need it. Otherwise, we don't have a part in the coming kingdom of God. While forgiveness isn't listed as a fruit of the Spirit, and talking to those who have been able to forgive compassionately, to let go, they have shared how they have grown in joy, in love, in peace, in all aspects, many aspects of the fruit of the Spirit. We're beginning to approach the fall holidays, just a few weeks away. We'll keep the Feast of Trumpets. We'll think about the things that happened to happen before the return of Christ. We'll think about the return of Christ itself. We'll fast on the Day of Atonement. We'll think about the binding of Satan. And we'll also think about this concept of forgiveness, compassion, and reconciliation at that moment when mankind is reconciled back to God. This reconciliation will be the ultimate act of forgiveness, the ultimate act of compassion the universe has ever seen. It's an act of compassion that God will have on all humanity. It will begin the complete healing on hearts and minds. If we can be a part of this, if we can begin to learn how to be compassionate and forgive those who have hurt us, whether they ask for it or not, we can begin to grant true forgiveness through compassion.